Part 1, Chapter 5, No Bridge Exists Between Natural and Spiritual Man. In the preceding chapters, we have introduced you to the advent of an entirely new type of human being. This introduction is, however, not yet complete, but we think it useful to give you a summary of the matters discussed and to make some necessary conclusions before continuing our explanations. You have probably understood that dialectical man is equipped with a threefold consciousness, a threefold I. Therefore, it is absolutely imperative that we are always in a position to ascertain which of these three IS is active at any given moment when we observe our fellow human beings and are obliged to make contact with them, which happens all the time. These three states of consciousness in man are not just metaphorical or philosophical distinctions, but are scientifically, organically demonstrable. Thus, there exists a central consciousness, or I, residing in the head sanctuary. This consciousness employs the brain centers and can be explained out of their construction. All our intellectual faculties and their training result from the activity of this I. It is therefore able to perceive the things and values of life intellectually in the way in which they present themselves to this I, to draw intellectual conclusions therefrom, and to make intellectual decisions. This consciousness of the head sanctuary is furthermore equipped with a faculty of will. The vibration emanating from this faculty impels the blood, nerves, and muscles to action. Thus, from the furbishment of this center of consciousness, we can perfectly understand that many people are primarily ruled by this consciousness. Due to heredity or training, they stand almost completely under the direction of this consciousness. In a case like this, we speak of the intellectual person. To a certain class of this central head consciousness type belongs, amongst others, the occultist. We recognize the second state of consciousness in the heart sanctuary. In principle, this consciousness too works independently of the other two. Organically, it is situated in the sevenfold heart, but you should carefully note that this consciousness has nothing whatever to do with the spirit, spark atom in the right heart ventricle. This central consciousness of the heart sanctuary runs the whole gamut of human emotional life. The emotional life is a perfect instrument of consciousness, capable, for example, of functioning independently of the head sanctuary. Indeed, man can think with the heart. The word thinking, however, awakens direct associations with the intellectual faculty. So perhaps it is better to say that the heart consciousness is capable of perceiving or fully considering life and its various factors, and of making decisions based thereon. This consciousness of the heart sanctuary is also equipped with a faculty of will, which may be indicated as emotion or sentimentality. Man is also urged by the vibration of this faculty will to action. Persons who primarily live from this central heart consciousness are termed mystics, to which group we may also reckon all those who stand entirely in natural religious life. The third state of consciousness is situated in the pelvic sanctuary, or, more exactly, at its apex, and is organically connected with the liver solar plexus spleen system, already discussed in detail. This central abdominal consciousness is the most fundamental of the three natural egos. It determines the character we bring into this world. All our hidden or visible inclinations, the whole of our karma, is anchored in this ego. This eye of the liver spleen system exercises a strong, dominating influence upon the other two egos, and it is with this eye that we tread outside at night and gather our nocturnal experiences. The head and heart egos can be dialectically cultivated up to their natural limits. The abdominal ego, however, cannot be subjected to any culture whatever. This ego is the true dialectical man, obliged to show his real self, unadorned, naked. And, inasmuch as it dares not show itself, It generally hides behind the more or less cultivated pretense of the head and heart centers. Then we sometimes hear unctuous and exalted words, overflowing with intellect and love of mankind, but behind this hides the bellowing primeval beast, ready to pounce. The abdominal consciousness, too, possesses a perfectly equipped deductive faculty in the structures of the solar plexus, and also possesses a will. The will of the abdominal consciousness is called passion, and all of us know that the human being driven by passion also proceeds to action. When a human being lives out of this third ego, primarily and utterly unbridled, he represents primeval man, genuine, unrestrained, natural man, the brutal materialist, the crude seizer of possessions. Upon reflection, it should become clear that all dialectical experiments in the realm of civilization, culture, religion, and magic may be accounted for as countless attempts to bring order and stability to the functions and aspects of the three natural egos. But no doubt you will also understand that in precisely this manner, a great deal of insincerity arises, moreover, that in this way, dreadful, almost unbearable tensions develop in human life. All the diseases afflicting mankind are caused by the disharmony and tensions between the three egos of the head, heart, and abdomen. When the primeval instincts of man break out, he reverts to a life conduct so disastrous that a general demonism obtains supremacy over him. In every period of mankind, his leaders endeavor to check this basic danger by subjecting the head and heart egos to various educational methods. But as soon as individualism, self-maintenance, the norms of life are threatened, which in dialectics is a natural law, the third ego, because of its nature, enters the fray and the world becomes a raging hell, man a ferocious beast of the wilderness. No attempt by the head and heart to cover, disguise reason, or muse away this situation can belie reality. There is no bridge between natural and spiritual man. Natural man is equipped with three consciousness aggregates, two of which serve as safety valves for the third, fundamental consciousness. In view of the results of natural life, however, all this proves inadequate. Either a tremendous catastrophe erupts or a dramatic upheaval takes place. In either case, the end is death and the incessant rotation of the wheel of dialectics. Whoever studies the dialectical human organism objectively and experiences despair at the end of his deductions gives evidence with this despair of an exceptionally remarkable activity within his system. Man is a being of nature. His entire life system can be accounted for by this nature, and all his life impulses proceed from his unity with this nature. The suffering, pain, and sadness of natural man therefore do not arise from the despair due to his estrangement from God, but from the resistance he has to face in his natural development. Just as the rabbit utters its death cry when assailed by the ermine, so man cries out as soon as his natural development is hindered by sickness or mundane difficulties. Upon investigation, you will find that you can convince anyone of dialectics and the inevitability of its laws, but that he doesn't really mind them at all. He finds them quite natural, often even wonderful, for the dialectical world is in perfect harmony with his true natural state. He regards the struggle in nature as a truly human and manly struggle. The modern way of life, which currently governs the world, is entirely the result of this struggle and of this law. Humans, in their state as natural beings, despair solely because this world does not develop in the way they would like, just as they despair over economic collapse. You should thus not be deceived when these people, possibly full of religious sentimentality, sing their laments on this wicked world, for they consider this world wicked only because they do not get what they wish. You ought therefore to analyze yourself whether you perhaps approach or approached the spiritual school as one disappointed in nature or because you really know yourself to be a stranger in this world, and the despair of this estrangement from God preys upon your soul. Should the latter be the case, then there is a most remarkable activity in your system, for this disquiet is to be explained out of the working of the spirit spark atom. If a person still possesses this atom, and it can be stirred to action by the gnosis, the following words will be fulfilled. We want to follow thine example, wise and main, as atoms gathered towards one sublimated self. For this ego's very consciousness, we want to delve till the atom knows. Within the ego, I'm in pain. It is this pain of the spirit spark atom in the ordinary natural being which matters, because only this pain, only this torment, is liberating. Whoever knows something of this pain realizes that these wheels serve to heal him. For through this pain, the true pupil discovers that the gnosis has found him or her. Whoever suffers natural pain howls like a beast in the wild, but he who suffers the pain of the spiritually seized human being is blessed, for then will be kindles the great light. By divine power, the spirit atom, the Lord's gleam, will imbibe, and through dark matter arise from the night. Who thus suffers pain in the ego as a consequence of the awakened spirit spark atom will begin the process spoken of, a process which is literally and bodily the death knell to the three dialectical egos. As we know, out of the spirit spark atom is born the clear image of immortal man, who ultimately causes the mental conception to enter the liver-spleen system in order to assail the key position of the dialectical natural being. First, the heart sanctuary is forced by the spirit spark atom to new liberating action, and the central heart consciousness is thus the first to be driven from its natural state. Through a new mental activity, the central head consciousness is then included in the stream of renewal. Then the image of the immortal man must enter the spleen liver lock in order to attack the third ego. Then the axe is put to the root of dialectical existence. When this third activity commences in the pupil, he concretely prepares himself for the future new human type. He is organically made ready to encounter Christ in the clouds of heaven. Then the words, "Death is swallowed up in victory," become reality. If, however, you do not possess the spirit spark atom, or if it has not yet been ignited by the gnosis, you will take note of our information and contemplations only in an intellectual or mystical way, according to the inclinations of the first or second ego within you. Essentially, however, they will not convey anything to you and will not set you in motion. But if, with us, you suffer pain in the ego through the spirit spark atom, and thus the light of the gnosis has become a lamp unto your feet, then every discussion from the spiritual school will summon up a mighty power in you. Every word will appeal directly to the spirit spark atom buried in you heart's blood. Through the wonderful qualities of the spirit, you will be enabled to test every word to immediately recognize it as truth. This will establish an incomparable power in your bloodstream. In this way, the work of the Lord, the work of the universal brotherhood of Christ, will be methodically consolidated in you. You should understand the words of Paul in this light. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unswerving, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. The work of the Lord in this sense is not some pastoral activity which the school of the Rosy Cross does for you, but a methodical activity accomplished in you and for you by the gnosis. This activity undertaken by the brotherhood within and for you is not an activity of which you remain ignorant. It is not a process of liberation to which you are admitted automatically. but your entire spirit spark atom, which suffers pain in the ego, must intelligently cooperate in this work. Therefore, pupils on the path, be steadfast and unswerving.